Okay. You're all good to go, man?
Yep, golden.
All right. So, welcome back to Noise Avocation Podcast. I'm Ryan here with Jeremy.
What up?
And we have Gavin here from Ekaika. Did I say that right?
You got it. You got it. Nailed it.
Cool. How you doing, man? We appreciate you taking the time to jump on.
Yeah, of course, man. No, I'm good. Just dropped the daughter off to school. Beautiful morning here on the west side of Maui. It's slightly rainy. And about to talk story, as we say, with some new homies from Michigan. Cool. Life's good. Life's good.
You were just up in Michigan. I talked to you like last week. You said you were up here for, what were you up here for?
So my mom is from Gun Lake. Okay. But we have a generational family cabin up in like way, way northern Ontario on her side. So
awesome.
We went back for a trip. Like we haven't been back there. Like I haven't been back since I was maybe like 15. I'm 40 now. So been a long time. So little family reunion of sorts. But yeah, we flew into Michigan, see her family for a little bit, and then just cruised into Canada and whatnot.
Cool. Yeah. Where are you?
It's a long flight, man.
Yeah, that is. How long?
It's
like 12 hours, isn't it?
Or 12 is
it
hours, longer? Yeah. But I'm so used to, because my wife's family's was in Canada as well, so we'd always, you know, probably like once a year fly there, or I'll go to Tampa or whatever. And that's, I mean, I'm used to it by now. Like, as crazy as it is to say.
The longest flight I've been on is like two and a half hours, and I was in like fifth grade or something, maybe sixth grade, somewhere around there.
Yeah. I stay on the ground, man.
Yeah.
Right.
I haven't been back up since, but we'll get there because I got places I want to go. So were you born in Hawaii originally then?
Yeah, born and raised in Lahaina, west side of Maui.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how's growing up in Hawaii? I mean, is that like what we would think of, like, you're growing up in like paradise, basically, eh?
Yeah. I mean, no, it's amazing, man. I mean, the culture is it's just such a laid back place. You know, you're essentially on Hawaii time, which is kind of like it's like life moves so slow over here compared to the mainland. Even like culturally, like Hawaii is almost like 5 years behind the mainland and stuff. But no, it was great. Yeah, it was awesome, man. You know, just a lot of beach, a lot of surfing, all that. But no, I was born and raised here until I was about eight. When I was eight, my parents got a divorce, so I went with mom over to Florida. So that's where I got, you know, spent most of my adult life there. Always come back, though, and see family throughout Hawaii. So
you're in the sun either way, man.
Exactly. Yeah. It's quite the theme with me. I guess tropical climates is typically where I end up.
Have you ever been to a Michigan winter by chance?
I have as a kid, for sure.
Awesome.
Like, I love snow. I love the cold. Not living in it so much, but, you know, as a little temperamental visitor, snow's cool. And stuff. Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, man. I could do it for a week or two. Be like, yeah, all right. But then the novelty completely wears off. And it seems like every year that goes by, that novelty just gets like, you know, 2 days,
right?
Day and a half. Pretty soon I'm like, you know,
right. Yeah,
winter.
That's probably, well, I mean, I think it makes people a certain way, right? Kind of harder in a sense.
Yeah. Definitely it hurts more, I'll tell you that, as you right. like with your fucking joints and shit.
Yeah, I can see that for sure.
It definitely gives you an edge, though. Like, because if you can survive in the cold like that, like, you can survive anywhere. But I don't know if that's true, because, like, I don't know if I could survive in, like, a dead of summer Arizona or something. Like, it's hot, so. But it gets hot here, so I don't know.
I don't know either.
Never know unless I'm there.
I think we can adapt to any fucking, sort of weather, dude.
Yeah, if you have enough time, yeah, for sure. But the novelty of winter, like, it's cool and all, but then when it gets all sludgy and nasty outside after about a few weeks, you're like, all right, bring on spring.
I don't see Maui getting, like, I don't see that wearing off ever.
No, it doesn't, for sure. And, like, you know, it does snow here, actually, sometimes.
Oh, gnarly.
We have Haleakala, which is, I think, the highest point. Maybe one of the highest mountain ranges within Hawaii. But yeah, maybe like a couple days a year. Because, you know, it's past the clouds.
See, it's perfect. A couple days a year.
Exactly. Shit. Exactly.
Need to get a job out there, dude.
I mean, that's all of this and more is waiting for you.
You need to work on a tan first before you get your ass down to Hawaii.
I look like a piece of bacon, dude. Crispy.
Oh, you'll naturally get a little bronzed as you're out here, or if you're
fucking red.
So as far as like a music scene in Hawaii, is there much of a hardcore or even like a metal scene down there? I don't know of a whole lot of bands out of Hawaii.
Yeah, that's the thing with Hawaii. You never really hear of anybody. But no, there's been a hardcore scene here for decades. Okay. Mostly on, so I mean, you know, there's eight islands. So Oahu or Honolulu, you may have heard it called by. That's where kind of the primary hardcore scene is. It's not a big scene, you know, it's small. But that's, you know, that island's what we call like Metro Hawaii. That's like our big city island. So when we don't want to go to Vegas, you know, we just go to Oahu and have some fun there and stuff. But yeah, so there's been a scene there for decades. Small but growing. You know, there's promoters out there and stuff. Like, there's actually, I don't know if they brought them out, but years back when I came back in 2014, Terror played, Lionheart played, Thick as Blood played, Rotting Out has came a couple times.
That's a sick fucking lineup.
Yeah, just randomly on Oahu and stuff. But, you know, there hasn't been any of those bigger names kind of coming over for a minute. But where I'm at on Maui, there is a metal scene. It's kind of like a thrash metal, blackened metal, whatever you want to call it. This band Pilau, a really good thrash band from here. They, I think the guys also throw the fest. It's called Volcanic Strikes Fest. This is this year would be the second one. It's like a 3-day. Yeah, if you look up Volcanic Strikes, like they got exhumed this year, which is pretty sick. Pretty dope for Maui, you know. But yeah, out here it's, you know, just punk and metal. Not really, I can't really say there's a hardcore band from here, you know, other than, you know, this project with roots tied to it.
Yeah, I was kind of trying to do a little digging to find one, but I mean, they're really...
You're it, dude.
There's bands from the area and stuff, but yeah, it was definitely slim pickings.
Yeah, that's the thing, like with Hawaii, just in general, not just with like hardcore heavy music, the artists here, nobody really thinks outside of Hawaii. So that's, you know, that makes sense why you haven't heard of a Hawaii hardcore band, you know, coming from here. Which is weird. Like, you know, you can pretty much think of a band for every state.
But, yeah, pretty much. Well, I feel like people forget about Hawaii when it comes to like metal and hard, but Alaska too. Like, I don't know any other. And Kansas.
How would you hear about a band though, even from Hawaii 25 years ago?
Right.
Yeah. No.
A touring would be, it'd be so like inexpensive, dude. I mean, I can't, you know, just to fly over to a mainland.
Yeah, because there's no way, unless you're going to, like, board a freighter ship or something and take, like, a 3-day cruise out there, like, it would cost cash for the flight, the gear, like, everything. So that's probably, I would imagine, why there's not a ton of touring there.
That's true. Yeah. The logistics alone are pretty hard.
Yeah. But I mean, I think it opens up, though, like I said, with the whole internet and social media, Spotify, I mean, everything can get heard. It's fucking awesome, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, the availability of music these days is wild. I can't. You know, we used to look up liner notes, you know, to check out bands or see what shirts and, you know, whatever they're wearing. Now it's like, shit, you can just pull up spot. Oh, cool, related artists? You know, like, what the hell?
Oh, yeah, we end up down some deep fucking holes, man.
Right.
Sometimes you see related artists where you're like, this doesn't belong.
No, I know. That shit's funny. Or you get like new song from Terror and it's like, I don't even know what it's pop girl, K-pop shit. I don't know. It's weird. Yeah. They got like the same name.
Yeah. Well, I did some research on that too, because when I was setting up the Spotify, I'm like, oh shit, how do you get, you know, like related artists? Can you make your own? But no, it's all generated by the algorithm, by whoever's listening to shit. The most, like, you know, artists that those people listen to is what shows up in the bottom there.
Yeah, you're just trying to, like, sneak your shit into everybody's fucking playlist. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you could make your own, that would be really helpful, actually, because a lot of people would be like, "Oh, we sound like this, 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 and this."
Exactly. Exactly. Relatability.
So for music in Hawaii in general, outside of metal, rock, hip hop, anything like that, what was like just the music like culturally there?
Hawaiian music, just straight up, just old school Hawaiian jams. That's like my, soul music. Israel, big guy over the rainbow, that song and stuff. He was huge in my younger years and whatnot. Just a bunch of just Hawaiian, local music and, a lot of reggae.
I had to ask because I didn't know if maybe the Hawaiian music was pushed as more of an Americanized version of things and that's not how you did it there, or it was just labeled as Hawaiian music.
Right. Well, I mean, it's pretty part of the course. Yeah, the stuff you'd hear in those ads and whatnot is like, old artists, my, dad used to jam and shit. So
when did you start digging into music yourself?
Yeah. So I, in Florida, that's where I got my musical chops. I was born in 84. So basically raised in the 90s, I love, grunge was my first intro to heavier type of stuff. Besides all the classic rock that I was surrounded with in my home. And from there, got into Metallica, slightly heavier stuff. Metallica, Pantera, Megadeth, that type, and then went into nu metal. So nu metal is my kind of gateway drug into the heavier and into what I would listen to current day. But I never felt a connection with the music. I always wanted something more, like a sense of community with it. And you don't find that in there. It's just self-deprecating, what was me type shit. So when I heard, just the early, like Poison the Well, heard a band like that. And then, heard Hatebreed. I was like, what the fuck? This is it, And then,
Hatebreed has that effect on people.
It does, for sure.
It had that effect on me too, man. It's like, what the fuck is this? And why haven't I heard you before?
Yeah, that was pretty much my gateway to anything hardcore, man. I would have to say, at least that I can remember.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, it's been ruining my life, I guess, ever since.
And when did you start, messing around in your own bands and stuff?
Yeah, that came, high school. Started off with it's kind of funny, started off with a nu metal band. And then when I started to get into, metalcore and hardcore and stuff, I started to switch the band sound into that. And then, only took it. And this is like a full nu metal band. Like I would, I'd be singing, but I'd also be DJing. So then, once the nu metal stuff ended, we left the turntable and then it went a little more metalcore. And then that's kind of where I left with those guys, because they were more so into nu metal and all this stuff.
Right.
And then, just started playing beyond that. Yeah, it was a metalcore band and a hardcore band. Then a 5-singer band called Palestine, basically like the Death Star Wu-Tang of hardcore, but all about Florida shit, like lyrically and whatnot. So it was just a fun band with 5 of my best friends and shit.
Yeah, I haven't heard Death Star mentioned in a while. They had like 3 singers, didn't they?
Yeah, something like that.
That shit was crazy.
Yeah, it was hard. Or Shockwave, I guess.
Yeah, Shockwave's the shit, dude. It's like one of my favorite. I have a lot of one of my favorite bands. Never mind. they're there somewhere.
Yeah. Right.
But I can it's funny that you were from Florida because when I the second song on your EP is very Florida sounding to me.
Yeah. That's I mean
you can talk more about it when we get you talk about it, but. It's funny that, that's crazy. So right. I was just talking about that.
Yeah, talked about how it was a very Trustkill record. So
And you EP said Poison the Well. And,
yeah, so it fits.
Yeah. So we're on the same page, man.
Yeah, I'll take that for sure.
So the band name, what is that? What does it mean? I did a little bit of Googling, but I want your interpretation of it.
Ikaika just stands for essentially strength in Hawaiian. You know, with the band, I just wanted a bold name. And, you know, the co-founding guitar player, you know, that I started it with, it's just like if you saw him, you'd be like, and like me telling him what it means, so strength, he's just a big, you know, was a big fucking gorilla and shit. So, you know, a lot of testosterone leaning in the name, I guess you could say. But, you know, it's important to have, you know, a lot of this, you see a lot of Hawaii themes and, you know, titles and whatnot and messages in the song. And, you know, it's kind of like with the name, I wanted it had to be a Hawaiian name, you know, just to kind of like throw the what the fuck factor out there, you know, like, what does that mean?
Oh, dude, if I was from Hawaii, I'd totally use a fucking Hawaiian name.
Oh, for sure.
You'd be a lost opportunity to
Yeah,
not.
straight
But
up.
so I noticed when I Googled it, like that face or mask comes up quite a bit. Is the mask sort of, is that somehow significant to Ikaika as well?
Yes, yeah, so that's it's, I mean, it's also on the cover too. You know, you saw the figure in the middle. Yeah, so the Ikaika warrior, it's like the old ancient warriors, you know, in
Okay.
battle.
Yeah,
They would
yeah.
wear the gourd. And yeah, as a kid, you know, growing up, you know, it has a lot of you know, just references to my childhood, because I'd always see those t-shirts, like there'd often be that figure on a t-shirt with like multicultural slogans throughout Hawaii, because this is like a melting pot, you know, of Asian, Pacific, you know, cultures. So you'd always see like the Ikaika warrior, you know, in a pose or whatever with, you know, a Filipino reference or a Tongan reference. And, you know, I had like a million of those shirts. And, you know, if you're driving around in Hawaii, you'll see the mask hanging from people's car, you know, rear view mirrors. And a lot of people believe it kind of wards off negative energy or spirits or whatever it may be. You know, because Hawaii's it's a pretty spiritual, kind of magical place. No, it's pretty weird here. But yeah, that's why it's kind of like an ode to my childhood, but, you know, the cover in particular. But it's also symbolic of just, you know, rising out of destruction and, you know,
That's
moving
what's up.
forward. Yeah.
Yeah, and that definitely plays a significance in your case.
As far as Hawaii being a magical place, I always heard, like, you know, you don't like take rocks from the volcano and shit. You like take people would take them home, and then like their shit would burn down, or like,
They get really sick.
is that what you're talking about? Like that kind of like
Yes.
magic?
Yeah.
'Cause
Yeah,
yeah,
that's one like easy
energy there.
reference. Yeah, people freaking like in on the Big Island, you know, where it's mostly lava fields on that island.
Right.
The amount of rocks that get returned to their, you know, little state outpost is insane. Like, you know, with letters, you know, people like even my stepbrother 1 year, my dad's on Kauai. I was over there visiting. He took a rock from just the beach across the street, just a lava rock, black rock, brought it home, started to get super, super sick. You know, nobody knew what was
Weird.
going on. Mom, dad had no idea. Randomly, my dad was telling me he gets a note in their mailbox that says, "Please return the rock." They took it back, and then he was fine.
There was a note?
What the f?
There was a note, yeah.
Dude, that's like some fucking Hawaiian Illuminati shit or something, dude.
Weird, man. It's wild. There's crazy shit that happens on.
I never heard any of that. Like
Oh
people,
yeah, dude.
I didn't know any of that.
Yeah,
Yeah,
man.
that's wild.
I don't know. I'm telling you this much. I would never fucking do that shit.
Right. No.
I mean, there's a kind of like, I guess I'm superstitious a little bit. That's definitely a fucking no-no. Like,
Right.
I've heard of people even around here, like, taking things. Somebody we know, Ryan, took a spoon out of a house in Ausneak, got in a motorcycle accident, broke their leg, like all this fucked up shit happened. They put the spoon back, all good.
No shit. That's so
Yeah.
weird. I
Yep.
mean, you guys got a lot of Native American
Yeah, dude.
history there too,
Yep.
so it's kind of the same, you know, like I'm just imagine how many fucking buildings are over, you know, Native American burial grounds and shit.
Yeah,
So
supposedly
it's
this whole area is ceremonial and burial. Okay. And like I said, we got the Thunder Bay, right? There's another bay called Misery Bay. Yeah. And then, like I said, all the shipwrecks, like, I don't know, man. There's like some, I totally know where you're coming from.
Yeah, there's gotta be some sort of energy there. I'm sure there's like ghost ship sightings or some shit people see.
Presqu'île Lighthouse, that's haunted. And that's nationwide known.
Right.
See, I've been in there and I've never like felt that it's just an old ass lighthouse. Like,
I visited it too and never, but Hawaii. I don't know about taking rocks, just
because they're, you know, it's sacred to there. So when you reached out to me, you said that you started this band as sort of like a necessity for after the fires and everything happened down there. So go ahead and tell us like what went on with that story and like how that was and everything.
Yeah, to leave off with where we were at before. So bands, once, you know, I played in bands for almost a decade, like eight years or so. And then graduated college. And then, you know, because like the band life, that's all I wanted to do, just being a touring hardcore band.
For sure.
When I graduated college, then it was, you know, oh shit, now I got to make money. So, and then, you know, just trying to deal with five people for so long like that, you know, it just, you know, eventually fizzles out. Someone, you know, wants to do it more. Someone's not, you know, one foot in, one foot out. So that life was done. So I just got into the workforce and then started Still Proud. You know, that was kind of my microphone. That was my creative outlet. You know, I was like, how can I do something with all this shit I'm used to just, you know, screaming out into a microphone? How do I get that? How do I get all that out? And then, you know, it doesn't get any bolder than a t-shirt. So that's how that went.
When did you start that?
That was 2009. So it's like 15.
Right on.
Yeah. Long time ago.
Yeah, because I checked that out and I'd noticed that it had to have been a thing for a minute because it seems to be doing pretty well.
Yeah. It's been going good. I got to get back into it after all this. It took a little break from the band stuff, but now I'm kind of getting back into anything for that. But are you guys musicians? Have you guys ever played in bands?
Yeah, I have, but I wouldn't call myself a musician.
Yeah, more of like, I like to say professional appreciator.
I'm a chugger.
Yeah, I got you guys. But yeah, I mean, once you're like, if you play in bands for so long and then it just ends, you miss that shit so much. So, you know, yeah, I missed it, you know, 100%. But, you know, logistically, I mean, there's maybe a handful of hardcore kids out here, most of which don't even play instruments. So how would I even start something? But, you know, with the digital world, it's a lot easier now. So I have been talking to one of my best friends in Florida, Josh, for a minute about starting a project. But, you know, to me, it was like, man, I'm busy as shit now. Like, if I'm going to devote time to this, like, it's gotta be for a reason, man. There's gotta be a burning reason behind it, you know, a message and a purpose for it. And then unbeknownst to me, that would come, you know, like a month later of us talking about that, you know, with the fires. You know, having gone through the fires, that was just one of the lowest points of my life. You know, you just never think that your fucking town is just gonna be demolished and completely unrecognizable.
It's not like it was just a little bit, like it was the entire thing.
It's leveled, dude. I still honestly, I can't even, like, looking at pictures, I can't even imagine, dude.
I mean, the next morning, like, I'm sitting in line at one of the supermarkets here, you know, waiting in line for 4 hours, and I run into my buddy, and we had no power that day beyond, like, in my area for like maybe almost a week, but the rest of the west side, you know, was without power for a while. So I'm standing in line, and my buddy Sky, who I'd worked with for many years, he went into town. Like, he trekked in the next morning bright and early, fucking, you know, he's showing me videos. He's like, yeah, there was a body there, you know, cops told me, hey, you see a body, you know, just when you see me again, just let me know where it's at so I can mark it. Just wild. So, you know, like that, like, kind of just mental trauma, and then, you know, not knowing exactly what's going on in there because we have no fucking cell phone service, you know, was a pretty crazy experience. And, you know, about a month or two after I hit him up, hit my boy Josh up, I'm like, dude, now I got something to say. Let's do this. So that's how the project began. So it was cool. It's like, fuck, man. Damn, now I get to do this again. You know, it's kind of like a kid in the candy shop type shit. But then, so we started writing, just me and him. He, you know, he'd send me riffs and, you know, he had programmed drums and stuff because he's, you know, he's was in so many bands and would just, you know, record some of their, you know, rough little scratch tracks and whatnot. But so we played ping pong back and forth for about 2 weeks. And then he passed away just unexpectedly. And that, you know, that was another just fucking back to back blow. Losing your best friend. So, you know, then I thought it was done. But when I went back, well, actually, yeah, when I went back to Tampa for his celebration of life, you know, a couple weeks later, our mutual friends decided, hey, you know, we're going to help you finish it, you know, finish the demo in his honor, and let's see what we can come up with. And it's kind of crazy that the day before he passed away, he was texting me. He had tweaked a riff, or he had sent the riff to this guy, Marco, who would record all of his, you know, bands and whatnot. And Marco tweaked the riff, sent it back to him, and he sent it to me. And I was like, oh, shit. Now this shit's souped up. And it's crazy that Marco would be that guitar player, you know, to take over for, you know, from him. So it's very much been a family affair. Kevin, my boy Kevin, his best friend, right hand man, is on bass, and then we kind of pieced the rest of the band together for this, you know, upcoming show and whatnot. But it's been a crazy experience, because it's like, it's bittersweet, you know. It's like, fuck, cool, I get to do this shit again. Like, I miss this shit so much, but fuck, like, you know, I should be doing this with my best friend. But, you know, with that loss, you know, like I said, the reason why we did this, you know, project is to basically just finish up the demo and, you know, like, make something that he, first, of course, you know, we're stoked and we love musically, but also something that he would be proud of as well.
Yeah, so no doubt, man.
Yeah, so that's what kind of dragged me out of retirement, I guess you could say. And yeah, it's been crazy. It's been wild, because, you know, when I left, we didn't have Spotify, we didn't have YouTube, we didn't have fucking tutorials on how to, you know, blow your band up and all this, you know, dumb shit.
Right.
So it's like stepping into a different landscape, and it's kind of cool, you know, just seeing what the modern kids are doing these days, how they're
makes it all fresh, man.
Yeah, versus, you know, me bringing my camcorder to practice back in the day just to, you know, record the song so I can write lyrics to them. And I was like, fuck, well, I got full, you know, HD video on my phone, you know, and photos and shit. It's just wild to do this shit all again. But yeah, there's, I started just out of mental necessity. That was my reason, and I had to get all this shit out, you know. And yeah, thankfully this is the outlet. And yeah, it's been an interesting ride so far.
Lyrically, it's a very I would say strong, you know, like, it's, you can feel your emotion in it. You're actually singing about, you know, things about shit that, you know, obviously the high, the fires, staying strong. I mean, I think that's admirable. You're not just trying to do some like cheese dick fucking breakdown moshes and talking about having a big dick or whatever, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's not like, like, having done it way back then, you know, and having little life experience, you know, you're singing about general things. It's like, oh, like, you know, like humanity or whatever it may be, the ills or the positives, whatever. But, you know, I'm 40 now. I left that life. I was probably, you know, mid 20s. So, yeah, and then having, yeah, just all that life experience, you know, becoming a dad, becoming a husband, all that. And then, you know, you add in all those events, you know, the fires, and then, you know, multiple people passing away since then, close people in my life. It just, you know, this project was more, I've never been as vulnerable lyrically or fucking cried, you know, as much as I have in any, I've never cried, you know, writing lyrics in any project. But this had so much intent, so much emotion and heart behind it that, you know, this is the most honest I've been on any of the, you know, any demos or EPs I've put out with the past bands and whatnot. So it's kind of, it's like a passion project. It almost feels like it almost feels like a gift. Like that motherfucker knew before he died, we were going to start a band and then take it, run with it. You know, like it's weird, but, yeah, it's just been wild, man. This whole experience.
Yeah, well, I mean, you've had a lot of sacrifice and loss and everything go into your release for the project, so it makes sense that it would be one of the most emotional things that you've written.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, they, you know, like, creatively, you know, I kind of, they let me kind of hit the ground running with just the overall kind of message and image of everything. And, you know, that's why it's kind of rooted in my culture. Like, you know, like if we keep, you know, once we keep, you know, putting out new music and whatnot, you'll see more of a Hawaii theme in there. Because, like, also, like, lyrically, this is my way, since Hawaii is not known in, you know, in or Hawaiian culture in the greater heavy music scene or whatever it may be, this is kind of my way to, you know, in today's world, we've got like Zulu for African Americans. You got so many Latino bands, you know, Cali, you know, pushing their culture and whatnot. But nobody knows the story about Hawaii. So that's also, you know, one of the things behind this band is I get to express my culture in a scene that otherwise does not know about it. So it's kind of cool, you know, to.
That's what definitely caught my interest about this interview when Ryan told me that we were going to interview you. I was like, I know absolutely nothing about Hawaii. Right. Yeah. I mean, like, it's kind of shitty to say, but I'm glad that we're getting educated now.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was a booming. I mean, there at one point there was like a million people in Hawaii, you know, in the way, way, way early days, you know, with a full language, just governmental pillars, all the essential, you know, necessities of a society, you know, unbeknownst to most. And then it got, you know, westernized, you know, basically like it's the same story as like the Native Americans getting displaced from their home and, you know, basically, you know, kind of turned into slaves, you know, to a sense, to their own land. It's essentially the same story of Hawaii. I mean, that's, you know, how Hawaii got annexed to be the 50th state is a prime example. Basically just a bunch of U.S. businessmen showed up with like 100 soldiers, a couple cannons to the Queen's castle or Queen's mansion. And she just had to, you know, submit. And essentially that's how the U.S., you know, would overtake Hawaii. And then, you know, hey, cool. You know, we're going to throw a military base on Oahu. You don't mind that, right? Oh, cool. All right. We're going to take one of your other islands, Kahoolawe. We're going to bomb the shit out. We're going to, you know, test, you know, our missiles for, you know, warfare on your island and stuff. So yeah, there's a crazy, crazy context historically of, you know, Western influence coming in here. And that's oftentimes why a lot of people hear like, oh, the locals are so angry, you know, like, you know, don't, you know, like just be afraid of them. I'm like, no, you got it wrong. It's like, if I come to your home state or your city and I'm an asshole, I feel entitled to it. You're gonna feel a certain way about it, you know.
Yeah.
And then anybody would. Yeah, and it's not. It's like, you know, just think generationally of how Hawaiians grew up, you know, in their household, with the sentiment. You know, you'll hear "haole," which basically just means tourist at its face value, but it has a, like it basically a term, you know, a term like a diss term towards basically white people, white travelers to Hawaii. But I'm like, hey,
what was the term you said? Howley.
Oh, Howley. Yeah, Howley.
So it's like the Hawaiian version of cracker.
Like a wood.
But it's like, no, I mean, you know, just like, so the reason why that sentiment is there of, oh, it's just the angry locals. It's like, well, historically, you know, see how Hawaii, you know, became Hawaii, you know, in terms of the U.S. This is stolen land. Like, you know, and then like, you got people coming here thinking it's Disney, you know, like it's just a fucking theme park. And, you know, just everything beautiful here can and will kill you. From the fucking current, just stepping, you know, like 5 feet into the water. The short break kills people so much throughout here. You know, all the hiking and whatnot. People just slipping and whatnot. It's like, it's a beautiful place. You got to just come here with respect and reverence for it. Like, if you walked up to the most gangster ass looking Hawaii dude, you know, face tats, everything, big motherfucker. If you ask him, hey, tell me about your culture, they will fucking melt and you will become best friends. Because, you know, everybody just, like I said, people come here with entitlement. And
they dismiss what's there naturally.
Yeah, a lack of regard for such a beautiful culture that, you know, most people don't know about. But it's like, yeah, of course. Someone comes in there and they're fucking littering and they're just acting, you know, acting a fool in your place, feeling like they own it. Yeah, of course. You're gonna fucking, you know, get pissed off about that and have feelings about that a certain way. But, you know, just, yeah, that's Hawaii in a nutshell, man. It's,
yeah, it was basically taken over to be used for corporations and military training and stuff, which, because how far it is from the United States, like, we were talking about this yesterday, like, it shouldn't even be a country or a state of the United States. Like, it's its own island. Like, it's way
out. Exactly, yeah. Yeah. I guess strategically, the halfway point, you know, during, like, World War II, when, you know, Japanese, you know, they were coming with Pearl Harbor, all that stuff. I guess maybe that was a preparation of, you know, throwing a base over there or whatnot. Still pretty crazy.
Oh, that was totally their excuse for the base and Midway's base. But that's a whole nother podcast.
Yeah, sure.
So
you said you were... Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead, man.
Oh, I was just going to ask how things are there now. Like, it's been, what, like a little over a year. We were watching some YouTube videos of, like, drone footage of the island currently, and it looks like a lot of it's still, like,
it looks fucked
pretty
up,
burnt down.
Yeah, it's still, yeah, yeah. And also to finish up with that, like, when you said, like, you know, or I talked about the corporations and stuff, how they overthrew, essentially, you know, took Hawaii into U.S. statehood. Sugarcane was a big industry here on the west side of Maui in Lahaina, right above Lahaina. Like, growing up as a kid, I was right across the street from it, you know, just booming sugarcane and pineapple industries. But once that ended, that's just barren fucking cannon fodder, you know, land just waiting to be incinerated. Because it's not managed by those corporations anymore. And I guess the state maybe owns it or
but something. You can't, like, grow on it or anything? It's just like dirt?
I mean, I'm sure they could till it and do it all again, but, you know, for decades, that land has just sat, you know, there barren with weeds. And five or six years ago, we had our first warning of it. We had a hurricane go through, big fire happened up there. It took a couple homes, one of which was one of my old coworkers. And then there's so many things that they should have known, like the state or the county and the power, you know, corporations that essentially manage all those poles that are on the outside of that land and whatnot. But there was just no action until the fires happened. As it stands now, actually residential, I think I just read yesterday, it's 100% cleared. So all the homes, you know, of residents that were destroyed are pretty much, you know, cleared out. So, but commercially, I think there's still a lot of work to be done on Front Street and whatnot. But as far as I know, like by the little land acreage, you know, like block by block, it's kind of, they've kind of piled all the wreckage in one kind of corner of each lot and whatnot. But yeah, it's crazy, man. It's gonna be completely different. You know, that's kind of like one of the worries of you know, locals. Is that shit, like, if you've ever been to Oahu, like, Waikiki is, like, you know, like I said, it's Oahu's like metro of Hawaii, but it's super, super, super touristy.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, like 15 floors, just no view, just blocking everything. And on Front Street in Lahaina, which is, you know, where the majority of, you know, restaurants and stuff were. It's just
prime property, man.
Yeah, prime property, but it wasn't all built up to code. You know, like, you're not supposed to have a restaurant on the waterfront. So now, once they finally get that all cleared out, and like zoning wise, it's going to be completely different, which is cool. And but, you know, to a certain extent, it's kind of scary. It's like,
yeah, fuck. It freaked me out, man. I don't know.
Yeah, now big money can come in and, you know, kind of overtake that stuff.
Throw a big ass hotel where there used to be a fucking mom and pop.
Yeah,
exactly.
But they didn't come in when they should have, when it mattered most. Like, they come in when it's convenient.
Of course.
Yeah, you can pick it up cheap.
Yeah.
Fuckers.
True. Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's crazy that it's, and there's still so much like unbuilt and so much renovation to do, and it just seems like there wasn't a, I don't know, man, you guys kind of got slighted there. Like, it didn't,
there's no fucking news about it on, you know, at least that we see over here.
Right.
Ever. Yeah, I mean, for fucking 9 months, dude, you know? And then, I don't know, feel like an asshole just because I didn't, until we were aware of this interview, it was like, let's check that out. And then it's like, holy shit, dude.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. Like, the darling of the U.S., like, one of the most popular tourist destinations in Hawaii, just gets wiped off the map. And then it's like, there's a couple stories, a couple days after, in the scheme of news. But that's just how news works, you know. Right. Here today, gone tomorrow, on to the next fucking crazy-ass thing. That's kind of, it's also, doing this project has been my way to kind of keep that a little fresh, you know. It's not like I'm fucking Creed here or whatever, but...
No, man, I think it's good that it brings attention to it. Just like I said, I had fucking no idea that... I mean, I guess I just assume, you know, oh, shit's being rebuilt and blah, blah, but you don't really... I don't know, man.
Plus, you never know. Like, there could be the younger generation of people looking into this band being like, oh, like, they had something to say for our people. Like, we're going to step up and do that, too. So you could have been the torchbearer for your own scene and not even know it until in the future.
Yeah, the amount of people I've, like, Maui's not synonymous for heavy music. So, like, you know, a lot of my friends, they don't even listen to, you know, this type of shit. But, you know, you put that message behind it, that message transcends genres. Right. You know, they relate to it, especially here. You know, there's such a pride with you know, being from Hawaii in general, let alone Maui or Lahaina. And, you know, that's just a general breakthrough, you know, concept for people to, you know, grasp and relate to.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward as soon as you fucking put on the demo or EP, whatever.
Yeah,
I mean, it's the first song.
Yeah,
it's song two after the intro, but it's the first song.
Yeah, and then even the intro, I mean, that when I mentioned Hawaiian music, like, is Rana is a big Hawaiian guy, the Over the Rainbow song. That the intro itself is a song that he, I guess, covered called Hawaii 78, which goes over, like, the struggles of, like, you know, the historical context of just the pain of the culture, you know, living, you know, in a modern world or whatever. So that's, you know, that's why I wanted that to be kind of remixed as the intro to kind of set the pace, you know. And I mean, you know, it's kind of cool. Like, you wouldn't think to hear a slight, you know, Hawaiian music in an intro so immediately.
Oh, no, it's ear-catching for sure.
Right. Yeah.
Plus, it definitely helps you stand out, too, because when you look at the album cover itself, you could almost think it'd be like a, like Gojira, like Sepultura, or Brugira, like, you know, like those style bands that usually use that style of artwork. Like, you don't know that you're walking into a hardcore band or a sort of a metalcore-ish band, you know, like, it's catches your eye, but it's also surprising, too, like.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it did what it was intended to do, you know, kind of invoke curiosity. It's a very strong cover. I was, you know, when I saw it first, it's crazy. Like, So my boy Leif, who for all my old projects, he just did all the artwork for all the demos and EPs and whatnot. And I randomly started talking to him like, I don't know, a year or two ago. And he, you know, I was like, dude, fuck, like this is such a nostalgic project for me. Let me hit Leif up, you know, and then like, yeah, I'll fucking do it, man. Like, just for old time's sake. You know? So it's kind of crazy how all that came together. And it's like, it's, I mean, this band itself is, it's like a family affair. Like, you know, like I said, we pieced together the other members, or Marco, the guitar player, did, along with Kevin. One of the second guitar player is a guitar player that would fill in for, have you guys heard of Exit Strategy?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So the guitar player from Exit Strategy, who Josh, my former guitar player, they used to play together. He's our second guitar player. Our drummer is actually his brother that lives in, I believe, Chicago or Milwaukee. So he's going to be flying in, like, you know, to play our first show, which we'll get to as well. But yeah, it's just a big family affair, from the demo artwork to all the members and, you know, the connection of each. It's crazy.
Are you going to be putting out any hard copies or just digital for now?
I got to figure that out. Yeah, digital for now. There was some interest from a label, which I'm trying to get back in touch with in Europe, to do like a, you know, hard copy and whatnot. But yeah, I don't know. It's in the works. I just got to figure it out logistically.
Man, in Europe. That's cool.
Yeah.
So the upcoming show, when is that taking place?
Yep. So this is a fest that my bass player, Kevin, along with some friends, singer of Exit Strategy, Josh, and other friends, they put together this fest. It's called Hammer and Nail Fest for my guitar player, because he would always, you know, say in life, you're either the hammer or the nail. You got to learn to be both. So they're throwing this fest for basically his family. Any profits are just going to go directly to, you know, he had two kids, wife, and that's going to be held on November 8th and 9th this year in Tampa, and well, actually Ybor City, at this legendary place called Crowbar. 2-day fest. This fest can be insane. Like the first headlining night is Haywire, and then Florida favorite 3D Deep. The second on Saturday, so that's Friday night. Saturday is when we play Madball. Madball's on the
fucking sick. You said that's in Tampa, right?
That's in Tampa. Yep.
Shit. Shout out to Nate Stigney. You better fucking go, because we're not.
So we got Madball, Death Before Dishonor, Vietnam, and a bunch of local bands. That's wild. Like, holy shit, I get to play a fest with, you know, some of the most influential bands, Madball, Death Before Dishonor, that influenced me all this time. You know, shit, I get to open up to them.
No, I'm just saying, like, this was my backup t-shirt for today.
Oh, there you go. Nice.
Death Before Dishonor.
Yeah.
Because you never know around here, man, the weather, like we were saying.
Right. Oh, there you go. That's your backup plan.
So are you going to do anything, like touring, like a regular thing, or is that kind of just too hard to pull off at the moment?
You got to come a long ways to go anywhere outside of Hawaii. So,
yeah, logistically for this project, I don't think we'll ever tour. We kind of want to do one-off shows, pop up here and there, you know, type of deal. Just because, I mean, everybody's kind of scattered around or whatnot. This won't be a band you see often. So whenever we're playing, you know, come out. It's, you know, who knows? Who knows where it'll go or how long it'll be around. You know, we'll try to keep it going as long as possible. I'd like to, you know, keep writing and whatnot. But, you know, we'll regroup after this show. And this show's going to be wild. Because, you know, I haven't played a show in 15 years, so I miss that shit so much, but it's also kind of cool. Like all the kids that used to come out to my shows back in Cape Coral, Fort Myers, or Southwest Florida, they're all coming up. All my old bandmates, they're coming in, you know, my boy Tom in Georgia, My boy Dick used to play drums for me. He's coming from Tennessee.
It's like so double like, hometown fucking show, dude.
It's a big family reunion.
Yeah, that's so sick.
It's going to be awesome. And yeah, that's one of the last shows that's going to be thrown at that place, Crowbar, which has been around for decades. In one of the funnest towns, Seymour City. Crazy ass town.
That's so wild, yeah. For a first show, because mostly, like, that'd be like a show you'd hear a band being like, that was the show that fucking, like, started things off.
You're
for
like,
us.
Oh, yeah, we opened for Madball.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, yeah.
The fuck?
Yeah.
Sick.
Yeah, dude. So it's wild. It's just crazy, dude. Everything's crazy, you know. You know, it's like everything aside, all the intent and all the hardship and heartbreak behind, you know. Aside from that, like I said, this I'm like a kid in a candy store. This is cool. All this shit's, you know, it's just so cool and interesting to be doing it again and relive my former life that I thought was done. And, you know, I get to do it, you know, as a 4-year-old man. It's weird. It's crazy. But
gotta stay gold, yeah. Man.
Exactly. I mean, you know, that's one of the things that's kept me younger, you know, staying involved in, you know, shit that I used to just have such a love for, you know, and have been listening to for over 2 decades, you know.
Well, it's kind of like with the music, and you're saying, like, you got some 15 years since you did a show. I feel like for Ryan and I, at least from my point of view, this is like our band, you know.
Yeah.
In the sense of...
What, the podcast?
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of.
It's just we don't have to tour, but you know what I mean? Like, it's a way to give back to the music that we love, you know, and meet cool people like you.
Yeah. And you get to influence people as well, right?
Maybe. I don't know about that, but
maybe we might have influenced somebody. But at the very least, we've taught some people a handful of things here and there, I'm sure.
Yeah, fuck everybody else. I just want to learn some shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an ancillary benefit of what you right.
So you said that you want to keep writing. Do you have plans to release a full length follow up to this EP?
So I gotta reconvene with the boys, post the, you know, at the show or after the show and whatnot.
Right.
But yeah, I'd like to at least put out another like an EP, you know, like a 5-song EP. And then, you know, see where it goes from there. But yeah, I mean, Marco, everybody's busy in the band too. Kevin has our bass player has a really good kind of like stonerish metal band. Flora said he's kind of full time into and whatnot. And Marco, our guitar player, who, you know, picked up from Josh and basically wrote the rest of the songs. He, you know, he records and engineers bands too. And he's in a couple bands, I think, too. So. No, everybody's busy. So
time flies, man.
It does. Yeah, so it's kind of, you know, it's a labor of love project. So, you know, we're not, you know, putting, you know, it's not like a serious thing where we got to, you know, just keep cranking out whatnot.
Right.
Not so much pressure, but more just.
Yeah, exactly.
Get together, have fun, record some songs. That's the way that, like, the best shit comes out like that, man.
Exactly. Organic and not pushing it. Just letting it flow. But yeah. Yeah, I'll probably be the annoying girlfriend to them, though, at some point soon here.
Gotta do what you gotta do.
Exactly.
You got some Hawaii magic going on behind you. Your door's creeping open.
Oh, shit.
You didn't see it.
I
figured it was a cat or something.
I mean, I got a miniature Pomeranian, so who knows if she Houdini'd that shit open.
Oh, yeah. I was waiting for a cat to just like.
Right. Big black ass cat. This is jokes.
So we didn't get to, before we like get too far to the end here, we didn't really get to talk about your clothing company much. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so like I said, I started Still Proud after band life to just kind of, you know, express myself and express my frustrations with the world, as you could say. So yeah, started that, and then, you know, back in 2009, and, you know, as you can tell, it's very heavily influenced by a lot of themes within hardcore and hardcore music in general. But yeah, and then it's been very influenced by tattoo culture, so traditional tattoos. So you see a lot of the artwork, you know, behind the messages and whatnot. But yeah, that's been my little passion project for a long time now, and something, you know, I work on the side of, you know, having a job and all that shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's kind of like my little baby.
Do you do the artwork yourself on stuff, or you commission people? No. Or?
Yeah, I'll come up with the ideas, concepts. I have artists or illustration artists or tattoo artists that I work with kind of everywhere from Brazil to Indonesia, all around. But yeah, it's usually, you know, they'll illustrate it, and then we'll play ping pong back and forth to get it, you know, how I see it.
Right on.
Yeah.
That's a good way to do it, man.
Yeah. Actually, I mean, I've had a lot of US-based people too. Gizzle, you know the band The World?
The World?
You haven't heard The World?
I don't think so.
Okay, check out The World. Anyways, he used to play in Hammer Brothers. You guys remember Hammer Bros from Boston?
Yeah.
Okay. He did a lot of the early design work. Or remember the band Armed for Battle? XAFBX.
That I do.
Like a Seven Dagger band. Yep. Yeah, Tony, who's now a huge tattoo artist.
That's like, from like some fucking download days, man. That XAFBX shit, I'm thinking.
I also haven't heard anybody say Seventh Dagger in a long time.
Yeah, no shit, dude. Seventh Dagger, straight edge.
Yep.
They had some dope design. Sorry, I'll shut the fuck up.
They did. Yeah, they had everything. It was like conceptually, you knew what you were looking at when you saw that label. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah, with the brand. But primarily design-wise, yeah, it's all overseas people that help me out with that. And then, yeah, I just operated just digitally. And then, yeah, it's my office right here.
Fucking A, man.
Yeah. So I'm about to get back into it from the band stuff and put out, like, a little 15-year little collection and whatnot. But, yeah, about to hit the ground running hard with that because, like I said, I took some time off for just to give this band its due diligence and, you know, get it out there.
Definitely have to keep our eyes open for that shit.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and we'll definitely watch out to see if you're releasing any physical copies of the EP and stuff moving forward, too.
Yeah, I'll definitely let you guys know. Definitely.
Cool. Before we get to our final question here, we always ask this question to people at the end of an episode. Do you have anything that you want to add, say, get off your chest before I start to get to the end here?
Not really. Thanks anybody who's given the demo an ear and a chance. And I appreciate all the support. Shouts to all my members, you know, Marco, Kevin, everybody, because, you know, without them, you know, I wouldn't be able to do this, project. We go through all this crazy shit all over again. But just thank you to the listeners. Thank you guys for having me and, you know, giving me a little platform here to get it out.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It was great to hear your side of things for sure.
I'm sorry to hear about your fucking hometown and your friend too, man. My thoughts are with you on that shit. That's sad.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah, I mean, it's... Unfortunately, we're not getting any younger, life seemingly just gets a little crazier and crazier. So
I think that's what makes it important for you to do what you're doing right now or what we're doing right now is, like, you never know, man.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it's your way of leaving your mark,
right,
so to speak.
Yeah.
But we always ask this at the end of each episode, so... Jeremy and I, we do this podcast in the back of my record store, and we're big fans of everything across the board. What would be something that you listen to outside of the music that you play that people would not expect?
Or mentioned?
I don't really have any guilty pleasures anymore.
That's why I don't say guilty pleasure, because at some point you're just like, I listen to whatever I want. I'm just curious what the out of your, like, you know, hardcore and metal, that side of things, like, what's something left field?
Electronic music. I like a lot of electronic shit. Yep. Because I got into that at the tail end of Florida last couple of years. And then when I came out here, obviously there's no hardcore music. So I'm like, fuck. Then started listening to electronic shit. A lot of, you know, dubstep was kind of the gateway drug, which is basically, if you think about it, it's electronic metalcore. Like,
yeah, I've heard it referred to as such, actually.
It is chaotic. Yeah.
But no, I listened to a lot of house too. A lot of G house, which is like gangster house, like basically West Coast hip hop over a house beat, you know, or bass house, that type of shit. So that's kind of something out of left field that you wouldn't really think I listened to or whatever. But it's kind of funny, like the connotation that most people from heavy music have towards that kind of genre is like, you don't realize these are all fucking former hardcore and or metal. Oh, most
definitely, dude.
Yeah, like
Diplo, I think that attitude has changed over the last 10 years.
For sure.
Yeah, people are definitely a lot more welcoming about different genres of music. Because even like at the store, like we'll get people buying like Slayer, Cannibal Corpse, and Dolly Parton and Taylor Swift all in the same stack. Like nobody... Yeah. The walls are all knocked down because everybody has access to everything, so it's not just kind of pigeonholed into one area anymore.
Yeah.
Which is cool, though, because it opens up more people's like perspective to different styles and sounds of music, which if you know all people would do that, the world would be a better place, I think.
Yeah, we'll have to compare notes after.
Instead of just listening to Motley Crue for the rest of your life.
And it's like, you know, like there's not one, there's, it's hard to find one genre of music that can encapsulate every emotion.
Yeah.
So that's why, you know, like it's, you gotta be like musically open-minded. I mean,
for sure.
The music's in the ear of the beholder. You know, when I hear grindcore, I like it. Somebody else hears it like, what the fuck is that bullshit? You know, like,
yeah. But, I mean, it stimulates everybody's brain a different way. So like something that resonates with you might not with the next person.
Different strokes for different folks.
Yeah, that's why we have the beautiful thing of the melting pot of fucking different styles of music.
The melting pot of noise avocation.
But all right, man. We appreciate you taking the time to jump on here. It's been cool to hear from you and nice to get to know you. Hopefully, maybe if you're in Michigan sometime again, like get a hold of us and we can link up or something. Because it's going to be a long while before I get to Hawaii, I can tell you that.
Yeah. And if you guys ever want to come out here, my wife does have, she works for the hotel, so, you know.
Okay, cool.
Right on.
But yeah, mahalo for your time, guys. Great to meet you.
Yeah, you too, man. We'll be in touch with you online, and you enjoy the rest of your, well, your day's beginning, our day's ending, or getting to the evening.
As we say in Hawaii, ahui ho, or until we meet again.
Have a good one, man. We appreciate it.
Later, dude.
Later.